This is Infidel One. Offending Coyote Down. Offending Coyote Down.
Roger that.
Welcome to Trappin' Radio. We're proud, organic, free-range, wild fur farmers of North America.
Let me tell you a little story about how I was raised. Every day work, every day pray. God, family, friends, yeah, everybody sins. A winner never quits, and a quitter never wins. Help folks in need, don't fall for greed. A jealous man is weak, so think before you speak. If you love them, let them know. If you hate, let it go. Fast can be fun, but sometimes you need slow. God is all good, the devil is so real. So listen up, y'all, cause this is how I feel.
I won't back up, I don't back down. I've been raised up to stand my ground. Take my job, but not my guns. Tax my check till I ain't got none. Except for the good Lord up above. I answer to no one.
Now let's cover our sponsors. They do a lot to help support Trappin' Radio. So I'm asking you guys out there and gals to help support our sponsors as they keep Trappin' Radio on the air. First sponsors, Oki Cable and Trap Supply. Jeb's the owner of this. He's out of Oklahoma. Super guy. You'll not meet anybody nicer. It's somebody you're going to want to deal with. You can reach him at oktrapsupply.com. You can give Jeb a call at 918-429-4648. Not only does he do trap supply guys, he's a fur buyer, so if you're around the Oklahoma or surrounding states, give him a call with your fur. When you need stuff, give him a call and he'll get it out to you as soon as he can. Our second sponsor is F&T Fur Harvesters Trading Post. Everything you need for trapping, hunting with hounds, and predator calling. Guys, if you're into trapping fur, hunting fur, chasing fur with dogs, you're not going to be able to think of hardly anything that you can't get from F&T. You can reach them at fntpost.com. You can also give them a call at 989-727-8727. Whatever you want, F&T's got it. Blue Ridge Outdoor Supplies. Scott Payne is the owner of this business. He's in Elkton, Virginia. He also has a lure line, Mountain Rebel Lures and Baits. He's got a great coyote trapping video. He's also a fur buyer in Virginia. Anything that you're looking for and your trapping needs, give Scott a call and he'll get it right out to you. Wildlife Control Supplies, proven solutions for wildlife control, delivering value, expertise, and products to the wildlife individual. If you're an ADC business, control business, even fur trapping, you need to look at these guys' website. Top-notch company, have everything you would want, even the odd stuff that ADC guys are looking for. You can reach them at wildlifecontrolsupplies.com. You can give them a call at 877-684-7262. International number is 860-844-0101. If you're a wildlife control professional, you need to have Wildlife Control Supplies as one of your favorites on your computer or your phone, because when you come across something that you need specialized equipment, Alan will get it right out to you.
Now let's go trapping.
See, I'm a flag flying, Bible toting son of a gun. Yeah, I'm hell on the heart, just a rebel on the run. Scared, don't know it. Fear, don't feel it. The truth is the light. Sometimes you gotta fight. Good beats bad, right beats wrong. I'm a barroom preacher and this is my song. I'm climbing for the top, representing for the country. I'm the people's champ, right out to dig. Shotgun toter, Republican voter, Hank Jr. supporter, let's protect our border. To hell with anyone who don't believe in the USA, cause this is what I say.
I won't back up, I don't back down. I've been raised up to stand my ground. Take my job, but not my guns. Tax my check till I ain't got...
Well, hello everyone, this is Clint Locklear. I want to remind everybody about Jeb's special. He's running on his Duke Dogproof traps. It's $130 a dozen while supplies last. That's a great price. Prices are going up on about everything. So just keep that in mind. Now before we get started, I want to start with some absolutely useless information that I found so intriguing. Now, I read a lot. And if you've been listening to the show a while, you know I read a lot. And I go all over the place. I may be reading a Vince Flynn book this week. I may be reading a book on permaculture next week. I may be reading one on history. I really like history. Well, I've read, I believe it's 1492, which was all the world, what was going on in the world up till Christopher Columbus and what that was like for Christopher Columbus. And it's a, if you're into history, it's a cool read. If you're looking for a Vince Flynn novel, not something for you probably. And then I read that, and then there's one that's called 1493. It's hard to think in those numbers. But it's, what was America like when what we consider the pilgrims that got here? And if you really study history, the concept that you're taught in school, and I'm not going to go into this, but the idea that, you know, you had pilgrims that left England for the simple fact that they were trying to have religious freedom and all that, that's a bunch of hogwash, guys. I mean, that there's no historical relevance or backing of that of any kind. It was a business venture from business people that were trying to figure out that they thought America was like 100 miles across, and they thought they could get to China by river. That's the reason we come here. So, I mean, you know, not to saying that anything's wrong with that, but history's a neat thing when you get to go about it. But here's the absolute useless information for you. Now, you know, I'm a proud Southern American. You know, I'm an Appalachian full-blooded male, 100% Southern. Grew up in Tennessee, spent time in Alaska, Thailand, Kentucky, Fort Campbell, different places like that. I live at the base of the Cumberland Plateau. It's an absolute gorgeous part of the country, and that's the reason I live here. Love it, love it, love it. You know, and part of the culture of the South is, you know, we kind of joke with Northerners all the time about the War of Northern Aggression. And that's exactly what that was, because here's another thing in history. If you think that the Civil War was a civil war, go look up the definition of a civil war, and you'll find out very quickly, whatever that was, it was not a civil war. So that'll give you something if you're an inquisitive type person and you believe what you've been taught in school, that was a civil war. It was not. But because of the joking and stuff that goes along, the Mason-Dixon line. Now, we're getting to the useless information here because I find this fascinating. What is the Mason-Dixon line from a historical point of view? Because, you know, like Newt, being from New Jersey, Southern New Jersey, he says he's below the Mason-Dixon line. Now, for years, I kind of thought that was, you know, I really gave him a hard time about that, because there's nothing Southern about New Jersey. I'm sorry. You know, there's some very country, good-hearted people in New Jersey like Newt, but it is not Southern. Been there, done that. It's not Southern. So, you know, we give each other a hard time. Well, in this book, 1493, it goes into the Mason-Dixon line. Now, this is what I found truly fascinating about the Mason-Dixon line. Why is it called that? Well, you had two guys that actually were surveyors, and one's last name was Mason, and one's last name was Dixon. So it's not like, you know, Land of Dixie or anything like that. But what was that line? Well, interestingly enough, that is the malaria line. If you go south of that line, it's warm enough where the parasite from malaria can grow inside a mosquito and cause people problems. If you're north of the Mason-Dixon line, you don't have enough warm weather consistently to allow the malaria inside a mosquito to go to full function and reproduce. So if you're north of the Mason-Dixon line, you actually, there's no chance of malaria. Now, that's not something we think about too much anymore, but when the, you know, 60 to 70% of the original colonists that came to this country died of that, or yellow fever, which is also a mosquito thing. So you have the Mason-Dixon line And we look at it from northern and southern. We look at it culturally. We look at it all these different ways. But the truth of the matter is, historically, that was the malaria line that was going across the eastern part of the country when the colonists were setting everything up, which I just, the useless information, I know nothing about trapping, but I read that like four times in that book, and to me that was just, never heard anything like it. So I did some more research, and sure enough, Mason Dixon were two guys that just happened to be the surveyor. They were trying to figure out where that line was, and they was basing that off temperature. Now, if that's the same now, I don't know, since we have all this massive global warming and everything that Al Gore talks about, but it can't be global warming. Good grief, guys. It's almost June. I mean, it's almost Labor Day, and it's 43 degrees in the south. And it's not morning time. It's 9:10 and raining. So, you know, the global warming thing, I think you know how I feel about that. But, you know, this useless information about what the Mason-Dixon line is, don't know what you're going to do with it, but there you have it. Now, I want to talk about a couple of things today that that I find very interesting. And one of them is going to be coyote locations. Or what is a coyote location, and then how you set those up with traps. Now, how far we get into that, I don't know. But before I get into that, I've got a letter here, and I'm not going to say the whole name just because I get a little nervous doing that. But it's first name C, last name Richie. You sent me a letter. You know exactly who you are. And there's some questions in here, and in me trying to write this, a question like this is so open-ended. It's really hard to write something back like this, so I'm going to spend a few minutes of this on there. But this is a cool letter. And Mr. Richie, I give you kudos because I think you're going to become something. Whether it is in trapping or not, I think that you've got your brain on, it's working the right way. Now this, it says, hello, my name is C. Richie. I'm 14 years old and from somewhere in Arkansas. Been a listener to Trapping Radio. My life revolves around trapping. At school, I listen to Trapping Radio that I download on my phone. Our school lets us listen to music while we're working. And, you know, just a side note, I think that's amazing. I mean, how much school has changed that you can listen to music while you're, I guess, doing homework. But this is where this letter gets kind of interesting. Now, Mr. Richie, being 14 years old, you know, keep in mind, if you look going back to history, 14 years old, you might have been moving across the Oklahoma plains with a wife. So don't let anybody treat you like a kid, because if you think like a kid, you're always going to think like a kid, and I don't think you're doing that. So you're doing a great job here. But he says, I'm going to be a professional trapper. Now, everybody listen to this. That's underlined three times. I'm going to be. Love it. I love it. The 14-year-old is already making that up. He says, I don't run many traps because of I do it before school. Caught 19 raccoons and one beaver this year, disappointed me tremendously, and I'm hoping to change that for next season. Now, Richie, you're being 14 years old, probably not driving yet, I would say, you know, unless you're on a farm or something and you run around on the farm. You know, at 14 years old, there's a lot of things you're going to have to keep in perspective. Dude, at 14 years old, I wish I could have said that I caught 19 raccoons and a beaver. There's a lot of other 14-year-olds that wish they could say the same thing. Heck, there's 30-year-olds that are trying to catch 19 raccoons. So don't get caught up into the Facebook mania and the pictures and all the way that social media, you know, it's got to be big or go home all the time. You're in the learning stage. You know, you're in that stage of trapping where you're figuring things out. And unfortunately, America, the way that we think today, you think everything, not you maybe personally, but we think as a culture, everything is instant. Everything happens just the way you read about it. Everything goes according to plan. And if you do a little bit of research, you can just do this and all of a sudden this is results. I'm sorry, that's just not trapping. It's not realistic trapping in any stretch of the imagination. 19 coon and one beaver at 14 years old? Dude, that's kicking butt. I mean, that is such a, to me, that's a monumental thing because you can only go, you can't go anywhere but up. And the learning concept, and you're probably hurt on logistics, like I said, with driving. You're not going to have the inventory. When you look at pictures on internet and you're looking at, you know, like me or Jeff or Scott Welch or Blackie or Randy Smith, all these different guys. I mean, I can just name and name and name. You gotta keep in perspective and a realistic perspective. If I decide that I need 330s to go trap a certain animal, I've got like 400 of them sitting here. If I want to go trap raccoons, I've got like 500 of them sitting here. If I need 220s to go to another state to dry land otter or raccoon, I've got hundreds and hundreds of them sitting here. So when you see those pictures, you've got to keep that in perspective. Now, unless someone wields you a lot of that type of equipment, or, you know, maybe you're working a part-time job or whatever, which I would highly recommend so you can get all the equipment that you want to get, you're probably not going to have the full force of all that equipment behind you that when you go out, you don't have to be sparingly with it. Because if I come up on a beaver swamp, I don't have to worry if I set 15 330 body grips inside there, because I've still got hundreds more to use. So you're probably not going to have the amount of equipment. You're not going to have the logistical freedom. And right before school, you're not having a whole lot of time. You know, when you see pictures, and I'm up in Ohio and I'm raccoon trapping, or I'm out in Texas and I'm bobcat trapping, or I'm down in Louisiana and I'm beaver and otter trapping, you've got to keep in mind, that's from about daylight till usually about an hour or so before dark, 7 days a week, with unlimited access because I can drive everywhere, and I also have somewhat unlimited amount of equipment. When I go somewhere, I take a lot of equipment. So when you see those pictures, you can't judge yourself off of those pictures being 14 and trapping before school. I mean, you just can't do that. I mean, when I came back from Alaska and I was trapping before work, I just had a line before work when I started getting the swimming pool side of things. You know, I probably caught 25-30 raccoons, probably a dozen gray fox, a few coyotes, a couple dozen beaver, and a few muskrats and a mink or two. You know, and that was before work as a grown man. So don't get down on yourself about that. So, and don't be disappointed about that, because you have the opportunity at your age to be as good in this business as you ever want to become. It's totally up to you, nobody else. That gray matter that's between your brain, if you really pay attention to what's out there, which we're going to get into in just a second, the world is your oyster, man. I mean, see, Richie, dude, you're killing it. Don't be disappointed in it. And you will definitely catch more animals, because there's no matter, and I think I may have said this a couple of weeks ago on a radio show. With the internet today, everybody knows everything, but very few people can do anything, because you have the knowledge that's in your head, but it's just different when you go out and do stuff. Like, I can read a book or I can read an article on carpentry if I want to build, like I've got to build a well house for this new property we got so we can turn the water on and don't short circuit our electric in the pump. Well, I mean, I've been looking at this stuff, but let me tell you, me building something out of wood, that is not my wheelhouse. I can look at it, I can do all this. There's not been one part of that little experiment so far that's watertight, square, level, nothing. But I mean, I've got the knowledge of that. Now, if I keep building stuff with wood, and that was something I was interested in, I could get good at that, but it's going to take that knowledge, what you're getting from like Trapping Radio and Woofer Nation and different forms and videos and books and demos and stuff like that. But there's always the human experience part of that and muscle memory in that. So it really seems like you really know what you're doing. So, I mean, you're absolutely on the right track. But there's a couple of questions at the bottom of your letter that I want to talk about because they're pretty open-ended. It says, what are some of your essential elements on your trap line that help you be successful? Is speed an element to produce large amounts of fur? What would you recommend me to do to achieve my goal of becoming a professional trapper? So there's two questions there. Well, I guess there's three. What are the essential elements on your trap line? One, you got to trap where there's a large amount of fur to catch a large amount of fur. You know, if you're in Arkansas, I know you have some red fox, but if you look at someone like Phil Brown or Ron Leggett or some of these other guys that's in that belt up in Pennsylvania and Maryland, you're never going to be able, if you just look at what they catch and look at what you catch, you're in two different areas. It's no matter how good you are, you're never going to compete with that straight up. So the first thing is you need to be trapping for something that's in numbers where you're at, and there's a lot of them if you're going to be a professional trapper, which means like here, I just had some guys here from Illinois for instruction, and I'm starting to see more coon this year than I've seen like in 8 years. And what that means is it doesn't matter how good a trapper I am. In the last few years, because of some things the USDA is doing, dropping pellets out of airplanes, in my opinion, since they started that, our raccoon population has crashed. And I don't mean just got lower, I mean crashed. So a lot of raccoons, unless there's big, beautiful specimens, I've been turning them loose for several years where I'm at. Now, in my area, last year and the last 5 years, if I wanted to, if raccoon were $50 a piece and I was going to hammer raccoons, I'm not going to stay where I'm at because I may, and it would be a big push, may be able to catch 100 raccoons. 200 would be absolutely, I think, out of the realm of possibility. Just because they're not here, and you may see a track on a riverbank, and you may not see another track on that riverbank for 3 weeks. So the population's not here, but if I was wanting to trap raccoon, I could go to Iowa, which is like the coon mecca, Illinois, Indiana, Wisconsin, Missouri, all the way down in the Mississippi and Louisiana, parts of Alabama, parts of Georgia, parts of North Carolina out on the coast. If I was wanting to trap those raccoons, I would technically go to where the fur was at. Now, being 14 years old, school's going to limit you a lot, you know, on that, unless you're homeschooling and your parents are going with you as you're trapping or something, which is probably not very realistic. A cool thing, but it's probably not going to happen. That's one of the main elements to be a professional trapper, is you've got to be realistic about what is around you. You know, I can catch in Tennessee 60, 80, 100, maybe 120 bobcats if I really hammer and run a lot of miles here in Tennessee. Or I can go to Texas on most years and do that in a month or a month and a half. So the professional side of me, I've got less expenses, even though I've got to travel so far to get to Texas, because the animals are there. I know places here in the South, if I wanted to go catch 300 beaver, 400 beaver in a month, I can easily, well, I won't say easily, but I can easily meet that goal because I have the population to be there. You know, some of the best mink trappers that I've ever met are actually from, they're not with us anymore, but they were older guys from Tennessee, and they would catch 40, 60, 80 mink a year. Well, they're really good at what they do because mink is not something we have in high numbers here. Now, if you were to turn them boys loose in places that had a lot of mink, like southern Louisiana possibly, parts of Iowa, parts of the Midwest, you know, some of the places up in the coastal on the eastern side of the country, there's no telling what they would do. But professionally, even though they had the skill, the knowledge, the drive, because they didn't have the numbers, there's no way they could have been professional, quote, mink trappers. Like, if you're into mink, southern Arkansas is loaded with them. If you come to the mountains of Tennessee, you're going to be highly disappointed. No matter how skillful you are, you can really take a high number out of the population, but if there's not a high number in the population to start with, there's nothing there that you're really going to be able to make a living. Now, professional trapper, just on a little sidebar for you, professional trapper can mean many things to many different people. Professional trapper, in one sense, is someone who makes a living off his fur, or makes a percentage of living off his fur. Because when you read, you know, even guys way before your time, like Bill Nelson and people like that, those were absolutely professional trappers. But they also dug roots. They also, in the summertime, they would go dig mussels. They would do different things. Very rarely, especially with our economy the way it is and the way it's going, nowadays, is someone going to be able to make a living strictly off of fur trapping, year in and year out, unless you just want to live in a small shack somewhere and be a hermit? Because our cost of everything, the vehicles, the fuel, the everything that you need to have is so expensive, and it's so expensive sometimes to go catch fur in large numbers. For someone to say that they're a professional trapper strictly off of fur nowadays, is there's probably a little bit of twisting of the truth there. But you can mix in professional trapping and ADC trapping. There's a lot of guys that do that. They hammer the fur in the winter, and they catch moles and squirrels and bats and stuff like that in the summer. They trap full time. They're absolutely professional trappers. The way that my personal career in this has went, I actually for years was what I considered a professional trapper. It was strictly off of fur. I got a little money here and there when I could from landowners. And, you know, it was tight. I mean, it was absolutely tight. There's no question about that at times. But then I started building a lure business, and I put some videos out, and I give instruction and all that. So my life revolves around trapping. So my whole income is based off of trapping. But I don't rely 100% or say 80% on fur like I did a decade ago. You know, and it all kind of works out. Everybody's got to kind of find their own niche. To me personally, my advice to you, if you want to be a professional trapper, I would find things that you could do for an occupation that made good money in the off season. Like, depending on how you are mechanically or whatever like that. When I was in the pool business was a cool thing to be a trapper because they didn't mix. So what I mean by that is, in the spring we started opening pools, in the summer, in the late summer we built swimming pools. Then about end of October, whatever, we started closing pools, and that's pretty much was it. And I could make a good amount of money in that short amount of time, and then it was dead time, and that was trapping time. And there's a lot of industries like that. You know, like if you wanted to be a professional trapper, you can make a lot of money in the summer doing landscaping and cutting grass and doing different things like that, as long as you don't get caught up into the debt machine. You can go out, you can have a big nest egg, have everything sitting there. So when you go trapping, it'll flow from one season to the next. There's been a lot of guys back when you can make more money commercial fishing, they'd commercial fish in the summer, and then they would trap in the winter. Where I'm at now, if you lived here in East Tennessee, and you probably have some very similar things in Arkansas, depending on where you're at in Arkansas, you know, one of my first jobs coming out of high school is I was a river guide for tourists on a koi, you know, and they would all tip. I'd get a wage from the lodge that I was working for, it was way more than I could make at McDonald's or something similar to that. But it was only seasonal. It was only about 3 months. And then that business goes away. Now, the good thing about being a trapper and wanting to trap full time in the winter, if you use your head, those type of things that most people are afraid of is an asset to you. You know, tourist type stuff, being a fishing guide. If you build up that, you could do that in the summer. You could trap in the winter. You could do truck farming if you're into that type of thing. You know, if you are looking to permaculture and food forest and organic farming and stuff like that, intensive farming, you know, you can make $30,000-$40,000 off an acre of ground. And then when that's done in the fall, dude, go trapping. I mean, but see, where most people, especially adults, get it doesn't work for them is because the cost of living and the lifestyle they want to live, they need 12 months of a income coming in from a job for security reasons. Now, being a professional trapper is not the most secure thing in the world, I'll tell you that right now, but it allows someone that wants to do what you want to do to find niches in the economy that make above average income during the summer months, spring, summer, or early fall months, and then you're free. A lot of guys do construction. You know, there's all kind of things, and it's going to be up to you and what it is you like to do. I recommend you start your own business. Even at 14 years old, I would be starting my own business. I'd be figuring out a way to cut people's yards, rake their leaves, anything that you can do, whether your expenses are low and it's just a sweat off your brow, you can start stacking money. And believe it or not, as long as you manage that money, you can start getting equipment. And then when it's time for you to get a vehicle, you just go pay for it. And then when you need gas, you've already earned it. And then that way, when you sell fur, you're making money, you know. So that's one thing you need to get a grasp on. Now, what are some of the elements? One, like I said, you've got to have fur. And then the second part, and the biggest part of this, which most people that want to become professional trappers, it's always a stumbling block. Equipment does not make you a professional trapper. How many traps you got in your shed does not make you a professional trapper. Because what happens, and I've seen it over and over and over again, when guys cross that threshold where they want to be professional trappers, they want some form of security. Now, being American, we think security's in stuff. So what do? They drain their money and go out and buy all this exotic stuff. I had a guy from Missouri that made the jump to be a professional trapper, and he went out and bought dozens and dozens and dozens of MJ 600 traps. He had plenty of good bridgers and everything else that would work. He drained his money, so when he had slow times, he was in trouble. And you're going to have slow times as a professional trapper. That's just a fact of life. So don't think if you're going to be a professional trapper that you've got to have all the stuff. When I talk about the number of equipment that I've got, there's guys that have way more than me that don't catch a quarter of what I catch. And there's guys that have less than me that catch more than what I catch. But I've been building this inventory up for decades. So when I come across new traps that I like this year, I plan on getting 4 or 5 dozen of the Bridger number 3 Dogless. I'll pick those up this summer. I still have all the CDRs. I still have all the old Bridgers. I still have the KBs, the long springs, the everything else that I've got. I just keep adding that inventory, so no matter what situation I get into, I've got something that's going to fit that need. But the stuff is not what it gets you. You know, and being 14, there's a lot of things in life, you know, that you just don't really get a grasp on until you get older. You're better off with an older truck that you can pay for and actually do a little bit of work on and go out and trap, even though it didn't get as good a gas mileage. Because if you go out and you buy a newer truck and you got $400 a month payments, that means you're going to have to catch $400 more a month in fur just to break even on that. So you don't want to get on the debt side. You got to keep one thing in mind when you're a professional trapper. It makes no difference what you gross. And what I mean by gross is how much money you make. That makes no difference. The only thing that matters to a professional trapper at the end of the year is how much of that money can you keep. Because you've got taxes, you've got car payments, you've got insurance, you've got everything else in life that doesn't go away because you're a professional trapper. So if you made $100,000 in fur and you spent $70,000 to go catch it, you made $30,000. You didn't make $100,000, you made $30,000. That's the difference between being an employee and being a business owner. And being a professional trapper is definitely a business owner. So you want to keep all that, you know, all that type stuff involved. Another element of trapping, you know, you got to have the animals. Stuff does not make you a professional trapper. And then the other part of that is you've got to know your animals. And at your age, you've got two pieces of equipment that you own that cost you no money to use. Well, actually, you've got several pieces of equipment that you own that cost no money to use that will teach you more than I can. It'll teach you more than any demo can. It'll teach you personally the best way to go about doing things. And that's your feet, your eyes, and your brain. So when your buddies are wanting to play Xbox and see who's the best at Tour of Duty this summer, if you were to go out in a canoe or walk a creek or just walk a bank or get out and really start investigating fields and stuff like that, you will be amazed when you slow down and you get off the computer and you turn off the TV and you go out and just walk a bank. How would I blind set raccoons here? Are the coons going to be in the water here? Or are they going to be on the bank here? Is there a food source here? Is there a pond that I didn't know was here? Are there trails that go through the wood? What makes the trails? Where are they going? Why are they going there? All this different stuff that costs you no money to go out and observe if you take the time. And it's really fascinating when you start to get into it because it's so wide open. And then as you learn that, you start understanding the animals. You know, do you need to dig a pocket with lure and bait if you can just set the trap in the water where the raccoon's walking? If someone knows a raccoon, he can just set the trap in the water where the raccoon's walking. And you don't have to go out and you don't have to do all the manual labor of putting in a pocket set, per se. Because you've spent the time to observe nature long enough to be able to make a pretty good conclusion of where a raccoon's going to walk down a creek bank. Because they walk in very specific places most of the time, unless they're doing something odd. And that's up to you to be able to figure out, how do coyotes go through your area? Why do they go through the area that way? How do they get to that to go through the area? You know, is it something they do all the time, or is it just in the summer? Do you see the same thing in the fall when you're trapping? Is it just a denning activity? All these type things cost you nothing to go out and observe. Another thing at your age that's not going to get you any kill pictures, but what it'll do is it'll set you up to be way above average when it comes to trappers, and it doesn't cost a whole lot of money. If you could just walk and put in mock sets, and I'm referring to canines now, or bobcats. If you put in mock sets, one, it builds muscle memory. Put in the sets like you're going to put in a trap out of season. Put those sets in, use your bait and lure. You'll learn a lot about bait and lure doing this. Instead of having flat sets with grass, go ahead and get rid of a lot of the foliage and use sand or whatever it is in your area that you can see tracks. And every 3, 4, or 5 days, go look at those sets. Have a notebook with you. Draw a picture of what the set looked like. Where did the tracks go up to it? Did they dig? Is their feet placement right at the hole, or is it back from the hole? Where is the majority of the traffic at? Is it at 8 inches or 12 inches, or is everything digging your hole to the back? And after you get like 15 or 20 of those, and you start looking at them all at one time, you'll start seeing these patterns. Now you're learning. You're learning how to be a trapper. And then now when you go to put a trap there, you'll know, okay, if I make this certain type of set with this certain type of bait and lure, for some reason, they stop about 12 inches back. So guess where the trap goes? 12 inches back. If you're using a certain type of dirt hole and you see a lot of digging on the back side of your hole, guess where that trap goes? On the back side of that hole. If you see them doing other things, when you have that information in front of you and using some critical thinking, you will know what you need to do when you go out trapping. And your numbers will automatically increase just from doing something as simple as that, because your knowledge level, of true knowledge level, will be so much higher than just going and putting a set out. Because you're gonna start transforming into an animal trapper and not a set trapper. And when you start becoming an animal trapper, your set's irrelevant. Really, it is. Once you understand the animals, all you're doing with a set is putting a trap in the way of an animal getting to some form of stimulus that you put there for him, whether it be sight or smell or a combination of both. So when you really truly get a hold of that, now you're way up here when most people are still trying to pound in dirt holes where dirt holes don't belong, or they're trying to put in flat sets where it's a pain in the butt to put in flat sets. And once you start understanding those animals, now it doesn't really matter where you're at or what you're trapping, because you understand the animal. And that's one of the biggest things for me. I spend a lot of time looking around. I spend a lot of time thinking things over. I spend a lot of time around creeks and swamps and everything else. And I do take the time to look around. You know, when you read a lot of stuff and you hear about guys going out and they're pounding in sets and they're pounding in sets and they're pounding in sets, and they never take the time to look around them whatsoever. They just see a crossroads, three sets are out of there. There's no learning involved with that. They're not going to be any different 10 years from now than they are right now, because that's the depth of their trapping. But if they got to understand the animals, they might find out that crossroad's not really that important. And the deer trail, 300 yards up the road, is where most of the animals are crossing the road at. So that's one of the things. So, you know, you've got to really know the animals. And the second part, I mean, the last thing I'm going to say to you, and this is going to seem very boring to a 14-year-old, but you need to be a geek when it comes to this one aspect. You need to understand money. You need to research money. You don't need to listen to people that believe getting in debt is a good proposition to be in. Death is like a sexual disease. It eats you alive and you never seem to get rid of it. Stay away from it. No matter what anybody tells you, at all costs, short of on a house, you do not go into debt. The other part is you need to start listening to other podcasts besides mine that are business related. And you'll find some that'll trip your trigger and some will be boring as all get out. The ones that are boring, don't listen to. The ones that interview a lot of other business people, that's the kind of ones you want to listen to, because you'll pick things up. And what that'll do is that'll totally change your mindset on what it means to be a business. Because a professional trapper and a stock market agent is no different. We just do different things. But the business part of that stays the same. And you got to know how to manage your money. You got to know how to manage your time. You got to know how to manage your business. Now the last thing I'm going to talk about on that one thing about, you know, elements that help me succeed. I've learned how to trap about everything. Some way better than others, but I'm constantly striving to learn how to catch things that I'm not as proficient at, and I spend a lot of time doing that. You know, because of my lure business now, I can back off of just pure fur trapping for a couple of weeks and go trap muskrats, even if they weren't $11 a piece. Because I know somewhere in my future, like now, they are $11 a piece, and I need those $11 muskrats. Now, if I was just trapping raccoons, and all of a sudden I was going to go be a muskrat trapper just because the market changed on me, I'm at a huge disadvantage. So what that means is you need to be able to go out and trap everything as a professional trapper. You need to know how to stack up coyotes just as much as you need to know how to stack up mink. You need to know how to stack up otter just as well as you need to know how to stack up beaver. Bobcats are the same as a muskrat as far as your skill knowledge that you need to be able to do that. And as a professional trapper, here's why that's so important. The market changes. It doesn't matter if you want to be a coyote trapper, a professional coyote trapper, and unless you're getting paid to do that, if the market is down and they're worth $5 a piece and muskrats are worth $11 and you've got muskrats, you need to, on an instant, be able to put the coyote gear up and go be a muskrat trapper. If raccoons are bringing really good for 2 or 3 years, you need to be able, and you want to be a coyote trapper, you need to be able to put those coyote traps down, go to Iowa, drop down in Missouri, drop down into Mississippi, you know, where you've got a full season on raccoons, if that's where the money's at right now. Because as a business, which is what a professional trapper is, you've got to be able to monopolize on whatever shows up in front of you. Because some years, beaver are worth a lot, and sometimes beaver are worth a little. Bobcats, I've sold them for where they're average 20, and I've sold them over, I think the highest ones I've ever sold, about $500. But they're averaging somewhere around the $138, $148 range. But if the bobcat market just goes away, All I've got to do as professional trappers go, okay, what's looking strong, and let's go get them. But if I was just a bobcat trapper, and that's all I cared about, because for the last 5 or 6 years, the market's been pretty strong on them. They're gonna go down. They're gonna get way low. It's just the nature of trapping. There's nothing we can do about it. When that drops, if I'm hard-headed and I'm a cat trapper and I try to go make a living off $20 bobcats in 2 or 3 different states, I'm not going to be in business very long, which means I'm not going to be a professional trapper. So you've got to be kind of like a jack of all trades. You need to know how to snare. Even if you can't snare in your state, you need to take a couple of weeks, every couple of years, go somewhere where you can snare and get very proficient at it, because you'll find yourself in situations where snare will outproduce trap. The same thing with body grips. You need to know how to use them, be very proficient at them, because what happens is you just put a 220 in a trail in a lot of magazines or videos and stuff like that, and all of a sudden raccoons start showing up. That's true and that's not true. A lot of trails aren't raccoon trails. A lot of trails, if you start tagging raccoons in them, the raccoons just quit using them. Some trails are like they're made from heaven, and you just keep pounding raccoons in them over and over again. A professional trapper has got to know the difference between all those. And the only way you're going to know those is practice. And go out and do it. And get that experience. Because you can't get it from a video, and you can't get it from books, and you can't get it from demos or podcasts or anything like that. So you're going to have to be very well-rounded. At your age, it's not like you're trying to support yourself on trapping. You know, to me, if I was at your age, and I'm not sure someone at your age would listen to something like this, I would go, okay, this year, I'm going to learn how to raccoon trap. And I'm going to study nothing but on raccoons. And I'm going to learn how to body grip them. I'm going to learn how to snare them, foothold them, blind set them, use portable pockets, cubbies, buckets, whatever. I mean, I'm going to immerse myself in raccoons. And then do that for a couple of years. and your raccoon catch is going to get a lot higher just from that simple fact right there. So you'll be 16 years old. Well, you're still not trying to make a living. Well, now you can switch. Well, let's learn how to do coyotes, and I'm going to focus on coyotes. Treat, at 14 years old especially, if you treat your trapping now like you're in college and you're homeschooling yourself and you use it from a learning point of view, by the time you're 22, 25, whatever it is, and you really need to support yourself if you're going to be a professional trapper, you've got a college degree that a college can't give you. You've got more valuable information if you treat it like you're in training right now, just like you're going to school to learn how to read and write and all that type of stuff. If you take your trapping right now and go, I'm going, just like you wrote on your letter with the three underlines, I'm going to be a professional trapper. Well, if you're going to be a professional trapper, that means you start acting like a professional trapper right now. At your age, you don't have the experience to be a professional trapper. So guess what? You go out and you get that experience. You know, if you're going to be a beaver trapper and it's easy for you to snare beaver, leave your snares at home and go learn how to foothold them. If you're good at using body grip traps, leave them at home and pick another form of getting it. Learn how to go out, if it's legal in your area, and spotlight beaver. Because I tell you what, you get in some situations of professional trapper where you need money and you need it now. And if you got rivers with lots of beaver and it's legal in your area, you can go out on a good night or a good weekend and shoot 50, 60, 100 of them, especially on high water. And now you've got an instant form of income that you can go sell and meet whatever that need is. But you need to know how to do it. You do not want to be in that situation where I'm going to go shoot beaver and it's the first time that you're going to go out and shoot beaver, because it's just like the hunting shows on TV. Just because you watch somebody do it don't mean you're going to be any good at it. You've got to learn it. You know, don't just read about how to do stuff. You need to physically treat this like you're training to be a professional trapper, and you go out and you become a professional trapper. The smartest people in America throughout history were self-taught. Now, if someone's got a college degree and listening to this, don't take offense to this. It's just my personal life experience from being in the military and being in business afterwards. I distrust people that go to college when it comes to critical thinking. I think somehow they turn that switch off on people. But when you look at people like Benjamin Franklin and George Washington and a lot of the founding fathers and the way that people used to self-educate themselves, they were way more educated than people that paid for a degree. And what I'm telling you is, being 14 years old, you have that opportunity to self-educate yourself. And that's what I would really, focus on. Now, the other thing you said is speed, one of those elements. Now, I'm getting fat and old, so speed is becoming a very different thing for me. Speed 20 years ago was a lot different than it is for me now. Speed for you is going to be different than it would be for me now. What you learn over time, when I talk about speed, it's not so much being super fast, going from one thing to the next, or digging a hole 10 seconds faster or whatever, anything like that. When I talk about speed, longevity of being a professional trapper, what I'm talking about is finding systems that allow me to be faster. Like, if me and you're putting a set in together and you're going to put a disposable stake in, and all I have to do is throw a drag off in the brush, I'm faster than you, even though you're probably doing more movements quicker than I am. If we're going to dig a hole and you grab a shovel and I grab my BT-45, you know, two-cycled auger, and I can put an 18-inch hole in the ground in 40 seconds, I'm faster than you. You know, if I'm, since I'm into the portable pockets and I'm seeing how well they're working, if I put out a bunch of coyote sets with portable pockets and it rains a lot, which it's going to do in Arkansas, if it rains a lot, but my sets are still working, I'm faster than you because you've got to go through and fix everything. You know, having stuff where I don't walk that much like I used to, because like I said, I'm getting fat and older, I've learned to trap really close to the vehicle, or right out of a boat, or right out of a canoe, or right out of a four-wheeler. So if we go to a field and I can pull up to where I want to put my trap at, and you walk across the field, I'm faster than you in reality. Even though you're probably, even if you take off running like a banshee, and you know, you can put a set in 2 minutes, but it takes you 3 minutes to get there and 3 minutes back, and I take out my auger and I dig the hole, or I beat my pipe in the ground, put my lure in it, cover it up, and do a flat set in front of it, I'm going to be faster than you, not from motion, but from way I've learned to trap. Now that is an element for success. Because as you get older, and I know it's your age, you don't think you're ever going to get older, but you will, and it'll be like next week you'll be my age. Longevity and learning how to do that stuff is what will allow you to do this longer in life. You know, if someone tries to trap the way, if I tried to run a raccoon line the way that I tried to run it 20 years ago, for one, I'd be so burnt in 3 or 4 days, I don't know if I could continue. But I can run a raccoon line now and catch just as many coon because my systems have changed and I'm always looking at labor. You, and I'm scared to say this to you because you can get crossed up on this. I had a guy that worked for me in the pool business. Name was Edward. He was a very entertaining guy to be around. He was a sorry employee. I had to constantly threaten, poke, push, everything to get him to actually do labor. Why did I keep him around? Because he was such a lazy person. And that seems counterproductive, but it really wasn't. Edward had a talent because he was so lazy that he could find ways to do something with less energy. And I would be in go, go, go mode at that time. And he was so lazy that he could sit back and come up with an easier way to do something. And most of the time, with a little bit of modification, it was quicker, did the same quality of job, but it was a lot less labor. Now, me owning the business, that also meant I didn't burn my guys out, and a lot of times it was done quicker. And you need to learn how to be not only a fast trapper, but you'll become a faster trapper with experience and muscle memory, but you need to learn how to be a lazy trapper. So you need to, if you understand the basics of a set, you've got a trap, whether it be a snare, a foothold, a body grip, a cage trap, whatever. It doesn't make any difference. And you're in an area and you realize that all you're trying to do is get that animal to step over or on that piece of equipment. If you think about, you've got a set, you've got a track it, whether it be bait and lure, sight, feathers, buried bait set, whole cow, whatever it is, it's in a particular area, and you know the animal enough how he's going to try to get to that particular stimulus you put there, and you get the set in. Then, once you get a grasp on that, you start figuring out ways to cut the energy, to be the lazy trapper. That's why I use an auger. That's why I'm going more to the pipes. That's why I use drags. You know, me going to something just as simple from 20 years ago, me going from double staking back before the disposables were popular to going to longer chain with a single stake, that mean I only had to beat in one stake. Well, I got faster because in a way I got lazier because I didn't have to do nothing with that extra chain every single time I put the set in. It was already on the trap. They couldn't get leverage on the stake, so I didn't have to worry about them pulling it. Just something as simple as that's being a lazy trapper. I add more chain, take away their leverage, don't have to do as much manual labor. I get the same results, but in less time with less effort, and that's kind of like being a lazy trapper, but it works out better. So you need to learn how to think. when you're younger, you seem to think the harder something is and the more effort you put into something, that somehow you're being better at it. And as you get older, you realize that's not the case. So if you start the game off finding ways to cut your energy but still get the same results, you'll be tremendously fast. Like, here's an example to understand this. Once you get a grasp on how animals work through a landscape, and you understand, like when we have a lot of our rivers, and we have, you know, the mountains and the rolling hills, and we have bridges, and we have all this. Raccoons, coyotes, bobcats, fox, possum, unfortunately, mink, sometimes a few otter, where they go from the fields, they congregate on a trail to go under the bridge because the dumb ones have already went on the road and they've been smacked, so the smarter ones use the trails. They go through there. Now, someone that understands animals and understands the part of being a lazy trapper, if you see the trail, because you're an observant guy, and you see that it really narrows down, and that's where the animals are, most trappers will go off of that trail and put in a dirt hole set, or a pocket set, or a flat set, or some type of set. Where a guy that understands the animals and understands that's where they're going to be at, and if the ground is decent, why can't I just blind set that trail in four or five different traps? I've used less energy than someone that's trying to pull an animal off a trail he's already on to a set. If it's sandy, like some of the areas are, it depends on where you're at in Arkansas. You get in southern Arkansas, you can do this very easily. You just kind of, you know, stomp in a trap bed, put your trap in the trail, cover it with leaves and debris and stuff like that, and go down 10 feet, do the same thing, go down 10 feet, do the same thing. Well, now you can catch three animals instead of one that the animal doesn't know that there's something there that he's got to do. He just gets caught. Now, that's a very simple way of catching animals, and it's very effective. But most trappers will, like I said, they'll see the trail, they'll see the tracks, they'll see the scat, and then they'll go off of that, you know, 2 or 3 feet and do all this manual labor to catch the animal that they could catch in the trail to begin with without doing all that labor. Because if it's a raccoon and it's worth $15, it's still only worth $15 if I catch it in a blind set in that trail or a snare in that trail than it is if I go over and put in this immaculate dirt hole that takes me 5 or 6 minutes to put in, and I've wasted time and I've wasted my energy putting it in when I could have just set a trap on the trail. That's one of the elements of success. I've learned over time to be a lazy trapper. Now, let me see your other question here. Let me check the time, because this was a lot more interesting question. So we'll probably end up doing the coyote locations and stuff next year. I mean, not next year, next week. But is speed an element producing lots of amount of fur? Like I said, that to me, it's more about the systems to do that. I've kind of already went over everything about what I'd recommend you do to achieve your goal. The biggest thing, and I've got a book, it's called Mindset of a Professional. You know, have your mom or something buy you that thing for Christmas if you don't have it. It's very motivational. And I've got a chapter in there, and I believe it's called The Wizard and the Glass Ball or something like that. But what it does, it goes over, if you want to be a professional trapper, you've got to start acting like a professional trapper. You know, if you've got an hour before school or 2 hours before school, and I say that puts you in a lot different situation than it does me. But if you've got 2 hours before school and you only have that limited amount of time, that means you can only be so productive in that limited amount of time. Your job to learn how to be a professional trapper is how to maximize that 1 hour or 2 hours. the best it can be. And what you're going to find out from that is you're probably going to spend less time driving from location to location and spending more time on specific areas, whether it be the side of a river or one farm or two farms or whatever it is you can get to. But learn how to pick most of the animals off of there in the shortest amount of time and have systems or sets where, you know, you don't start putting in a set and you got to walk back to the vehicle or the four-wheeler. So when you get off the sets, you've got your trap and you got your bags and your lure and everything. So when you go kneel down to make your set, or if you're spaghetti legs like Ron Leggett is and you can stand up and make your set, you're not spending any time going back and forth. And if you've already scouted these areas and you've got these systems in place to start cutting your time down with it, you know, your production's going to go way up. Now, what does that have to do with being a professional trapper? That's the same thing a professional trapper does, but he does it over 12 hours. Because to be a professional trapper, it's more like a marathon runner than it is a sprinter. You know, in the Army, we did a lot of road marching, you know, and I hated it. But, you know, you could put a 70-pound rucksack on a grunt and tell him to ruck up, and he could go for 18 miles. Wouldn't be happy about it, but he could do it. And he could do that day after day after day after day. And fortunately, I've got experience in that. Now, you put somebody that's very well in shape from a gym. He's all muscled up. He can sprint really fast. He can do like a football player. And you tell him to go walk, march 18 miles or 20 miles with a 70-pound ruck. You'll find out very quickly it's two different things. Or if you've got someone that's a sprinter, something like that. A professional trapper has got to be a lazy trapper and very knowledgeable of his animals and very time conscious, for the simple fact it is for 12 or 14 hours. And it's not just for 2 weeks on vacation. It's for 4 months. That way you don't burn yourself out, because burnout is a big problem when it comes to professional trapper, especially the younger guys, because they see it and they try to act like a sprinter. You know, picking your locations becomes easier with time. And right now, since you're going to be in the training phase, if you take my advice, you'll find out certain locations pay off better than the others. You know, you'll figure out ways, like when I've talked about progressive line, everybody's brain works different. Every time I've tried to run a mixed species line, the way that I see people talking about it, where you run down to the creek and you put in some coon sets and you look for some mink sets and you look for a beaver set, then you try to put a dirt hole up on the bank for fox and cats, and then you're in all this, my brain doesn't work that way. Personally, so a progressive set to me is one of those things that I've learned that I can keep up maximum production over a very long period of time, because I'm thinking about one thing and one thing only when I go to do something. Like, for example, if I'm going to run a water line, since you're trapping raccoons and beaver, if that's what you're doing, pick the animal that you either want to catch the most or has got the highest value or takes the longest for that set to be in place where they really start paying off, and you'll have to figure that out. Let's say if you're water trapping, you got plenty of otter in Arkansas, so let's say, you know, they're bringing $80, $90, $100 right now, so that's a high dollar animal. The trap needs to set in the water the longest because they have a lot bigger terrain that they cover. So the first day you go put out your sets, you think otter and you put those otter sets out. And if you only run in one or two spots before school, well, then you go, okay, I've got my otter stuff in here, but I see I can catch some beaver. So you can put in your beaver and your otter at the same time. The next day when you come and check those beaver and otter sets, you put in your coon sets. And then the next day you come in and you put in your mink or your muskrat sets. And then on the while you're walking back out from there, you see some high bank trails and you put in some snares or body grips or foothold traps for the more of the dry land animals coming out. And that progressive system for me allows me to basically, I can run, say if I'm running a place that's got 100 locations that start with otter. Well, by the time 5 days come, I'm basically running the same as 5 different lines over the same amount of time and the same amount of energy as it is for me to go out and try to run different lines, because we're on a 24-hour check here, and most of the country is now anyway. So I can go out and I can put out a long otter line, a long beaver line, a long coon line, a long muskrat line, a long mink line, plus catch dry land stuff when it's convenient for me to do that. And I'm progressively building that line up, and then I sit there and let it eat for a couple weeks. And then I start pulling them in the same order. If the muskrats are gone, pull those muskrat traps, because you don't want to pull everything at the same die. So I build it up, and then I tear it down in the opposite order that I built it in. And that's one of those things that you just learn over time that you go. But as a young guy, when I came back from Alaska and I had all these animals to trap for, I'd get under a bridge and I would waste, 40 minutes, sometimes an hour, because I'd be putting in otter sets, I'd be putting in beaver sets and coon sets, mink sets, muskrat sets, fox sets, everything that I could find, and I'm looking up down the banks and all that type stuff. Well, I couldn't get but one or two of those in. So if you're on a short time period and you're treating this like you would being a professional trapper and you're looking for ways to get more efficient, think about running a progressive line. Because I don't know your situation on how you get around. It could be a horse for all I know. It could be a four-wheeler. But that way you can run a little bit longer line, but then backfill it in and be catching a lot of fur. And you'll find out really quick, you don't need to carry everything that you think you need to carry when you start doing this. Because just think about it from the perspective of someone that's trying to catch a lot of fur. And this gets a lot of guys when it comes to their numbers, and it sounds like you want to be a numbers guy, and I give you kudos for that. Say I am going to run a mixed species line. Well, I go out and I've got to have coyote traps with coyote lure and coyote set making material. And then I've got cat sets that are very different from my coyote sets. Now I've got to have the feathers and the cubbies and the flagpoles and the different lure. And different traps, depending on where I'm at, if I'm using big pan CDRs in Texas or whatever. Then I'm going to need body grips. Well, then, if you cut that down to just 330s, it's not that bad for your beaver and otter. But now I've got coyote traps, cat stuff, and I've got 330s in the truck. And now I've got raccoons. So now I've got DPs, maybe some 220s, some 1.5s. I've got portable pockets in there. Now I've got mink stuff, which I could use the 1.5s on, but I've got to probably in mountain streams like I've got around here, I've got to have a different staking system. And all of this junk is in the back of one vehicle, and you're trying to use it all at one time. It's just not that efficient. But if someone on a 1 or 2 hour trap line were to run a progressive line, like it sounds like your situation is, you go out and you put one thing out at a time. And all you got to do when you're going to check those sets, is it a catch or no catch? Do I need to get the animal in the trap, or did I not catch anything? But you're thinking about your next animal. And you've only got that equipment with you at that particular time. So if you go from beaver to raccoons, when you get all your beaver stuff up that you can run in that amount of time, give yourself a little bit of time. And then when you come through and when you're checking those beaver sets, you've already looked and noticed and observed places to catch raccoons. So you run over and you pop in your DPs for existence. And then the next time you're coming through there, boy, that bank would be really good for pocket sets so I could catch raccoons or muskrats or mink or whatever. So then you've got your shovel and your setup for your pocket sets, and you come in and you put your pocket sets in. The progressive line is the only way, unless you single species trap on shorter amounts of time, that really pay off for me personally. And that'd be one of my biggest advice. But when you are a professional trapper, if you follow that same thing, imagine now what it's like to have basically 5 lines out, or 4 lines, or 3 lines, or whatever the animals you're going for out, but you're only using the same amount of energy, the same amount of money, and the same amount of time to go check them and harvest those animals. And you'll find that you got guys that do it. I'm telling you now, are they single species when they go out and do it? And that's one of the two biggest things. But the systems, being a lazy trapper, having the animals, understanding the business side, all of that. Dude, if you really buckle down and you want to do that, you can do whatever you want to do. You may be the first guy to figure out how to catch 5,000 animals. 5,000 raccoons in a year. You want to know why? Because you're 14 years old and your head seems screwed on straight already. You could go into training for that right now. Most guys that really get serious about trapping, it's later in life. Most guys get, you're going to get caught up in girls and cars and everything else that's going to want to suck that time away from you. You're going to have to make that decision. You're going to have to choose between all the stuff that most kids your age want to do that's just a complete waste of time. If you want to be productive, you got to think productive. If you're going to be the professional trapper, be the professional trapper at 14 years old. Treat it that way. Treat it like it's training. Treat it like you're in school. And I'm telling you, when you're my age, you'll be 20 times ahead of where I am right now. Well, that letter took up way more time than I thought it was. But that, to me, that's just an interesting... That was an interesting level, and I really appreciate you for sending that letter in. And hopefully take that to advice, And when you got this season coming up, send me some pictures of what you're catching. I'd love to see it. See what you're doing over in Arkansas. So I'm gonna go ahead and close off for tonight because we're already over an hour, and I'm probably gonna do. Unless something else comes up that I'm not expecting, I'm probably going to do the coyote locations and travel ways and stuff like that. And the reason that's interesting to me is Greg from Illinois, which was down here, which we did the show with last time. It was I'm so used to thinking of things in travel ways and things like that that it's just the way that I think now. And he didn't, and I can see why I need to spend some time on that. So if you're going to be, a coyote trapper or whatever type of trapper, try to get a little bit better at it, that may be something that'll help you out. And it may not, I don't know. But till next time, guys, go out and enjoy everything you've got outside. Just do what you need to do and get her done, and we'll see you next week.